pour your energy into the people around you, because I promise you that, like, it'll come back to you. And I don't know, we preach it a lot at Michigan. Like, you play the game the right way, the game will pay you back. And so you sulking and your errors and your negativity is not playing the game the right way. So I think just having that mindset of that, like, your good is coming. Like, you have worked hard. Just trust the process.
Hey, I'm Ashley Eagle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of When the Cleats Come Off. I'm your host, Ashley Eagle, and you are in for a treat today. Today's guest is Kiki Thol. She is the current catcher at the University of Michigan, and she's also an incredible power hitter. I kid you not, she is coming off of being a Big Ten Player of the Week, and she hit 3 home runs in 1 game. Wild. But she is an incredible human apart from being a great athlete. And we, my family, got to know her when my sister was competing her final season for the University of Michigan. I'm also excited to share with you that ironically, today, the day this episode airs, April 17th, it is currently her birthday. So how perfect that we could do this interview and get it out on her birthday. Happy birthday, Kiki. Now, I've been dying to get a catcher back on the show because I think there is a dominance behind the plate that I am just curious to get to know. And we've had Aubrey Monroe on in the past, but at the end of the day, this is a position that I actually don't know as well as others. And I love getting catchers on to share their experience behind the plate. What makes them good from a leadership standpoint? How do they command a team? And there's so many gems that we go over with catching. Other things that we talk about as well is she was very headstrong after hearing from a travel ball coach that she wasn't going to be playing D1, and how her parents provided the motivation to keep going when the doubt started to creep in. Like I said, we're talking catching. She talks about building your IQ behind the plate, making confident calls as a leader, and building a good connection with your pitcher. She works with 5 pitchers currently at the University of Michigan, and they all need different things. So she talks about how she interacts with them to give them the confidence they need to dominate their role. She also talks about some of her favorite drills to work on improving her transfer, framing, game IQ, her throws, and more. Now, her favorite thing is hitting, just like me. So we do talk about hitting and her routine and how she prepares physically and mentally for each at bat. She also talks about drills she works on to improve her power, her balance, her weight transfer, high pitches, and her timing, which is pretty unique for those of you who want to play in college. She also discusses the drills that they're doing together. Now, my favorite part of this interview was when she talks about being the vice president of Michigan's Student Athletic Advisory Committee. She also went to Washington, D.C. with the Carol Hutchins and testified in a congressional hearing on matters of NIL. I can't wait for you to actually see and hear what that experience is like for her, because it is awesome. Hey, welcome back to the show. I have a really awesome guest on today. We met when my sister was your teammate, and we got to know your family really well. We used to go out to eat with them between games and get to know your dad and your mom and how awesome they are. But I'm here to talk about you today, Kiki. Welcome to the show, girlfriend.
Thank you for having me. I feel honored.
I know you said that when I texted you. I'm honored. And I'm just like, I'm honored to have you on because, first of all, I haven't had enough catchers on. Let's be real. And I want to get into a little bit about like your approach as a catcher, you know, your leadership style behind the plate, things like that. My dog's wrestling with himself in the background, if you're wondering what that noise is. But talking about hitting, I mean, you've hit so many bombs already this season, but give me the 411 on Michigan softball. How are you feeling about season so far?
No, we're feeling great. Had a little up and down at the beginning of the year, but you know, that happens, and we're just working through it and taking what we've learned from the beginning of preseason. And it's kind of like you just started conference play, almost like a blank slate. And we're off to a really good start, and I'm really happy with how we're just playing, and we're just all just having fun and giving energy to each other, which is the best part to me.
That's the fun part watching. It's like I watch all the clips, and like you guys literally look like you're just so excited for each other. And obviously you're hitting tons of home runs, so I get to see everybody behind home plate cheer for you. But you do have like a really amazing presence, you know, on the field behind the plate. You know, when you're up to bat, I'm sure pitchers are like scared of you, but for, you know, those hitters that just want to have a better presence up to bat, like what is it that, you know, you focus on or think about when you're up there to help you kind of get in the zone?
Yeah, I think for me, it's just a big confidence piece. Like no matter who the pitcher is or what they're throwing, I'm going up there telling myself I'm gonna hit this ball no matter where it is. It couldn't even be a strike, but you know what, we practice all the time hitting balls that aren't even in the zone. We talk about them being hittables at Michigan. If you can strike that ball, you strike it hard. And so recently I've just really been focusing on that and just going in with a positive mindset, just being like, get my swing off. Like, you've practiced all week, no need to worry about anything else. I mean, I've made it to this level. Just have that confidence in yourself that no matter what pitcher's on the mound, you're going to hit the ball and you're going to strike it hard.
Trusting your stuff. I love that. I mean, that's what I see. I think what's amazing is I tell my hitters all the time, like, even if it's not over the plate, if you feel like you can get to it and you commit to it, you might surprise yourself. Mm-hmm. Have you been doing that a few times this year?
For sure. I think that's something that I've worked a lot with Faith and Chitty on is there will be balls that aren't even on the plate, but Chitty's like, if you swing hard, you have so much room for error, and it may not be the best swing, best hit, but it'll produce something because you swing hard and you commit to the pitch. And that's something I've really just been trying to hone in on is that you don't need to be perfect. It's great when you are because the ball most likely goes over the fence, but you don't need to be perfect to get a good strike on the ball.
I love that. And I love that you also have two hitting coaches that are just like all in. What's that been like?
It's been amazing. Just they are... You can be feeling anything, and they are people you can just go and talk to and talk things out, work through it. They're amazing anytime, any day. They're there to help you. And I think that's just the best part, even mid-game adjustments or pre-practice things that we do. I just think it's awesome that we have those resources and we're able to use them as sounding boards and kind of just talk through stuff and build great relationships.
I'm so excited to see how you guys dominate throughout conference and even post-conference. But can you share a little bit? I always ask guests this because, you know, there are a lot of athletes that want to be in your shoes and, you know, they want to know your journey of how you got to where you are at Michigan. So can you share a little bit of like your journey, you know, through the game, through travel ball? You don't have to share like a 45-minute story, but just like, you know, that story that kind of made you who you are and that you're proud of.
Yeah. So I played for the same travel organization my entire life. My Uncle Joe runs the Sparks out of Illinois, and I played with them ever since I was 9. And I think right around about like 14-ish, maybe like 13, I was in my head like, okay, I want to play Division I softball at a Power 5 school. And Michigan, of course, was my top school with having my Aunt Bonnie coach here and knowing Hutch my entire life. It was just amazing. It was a dream school for me. And at the time when I was in middle school, Kelly Christner went to Michigan, and she's actually from Tinley Park, went to my high school, all that stuff. So she was like a big role model for me. Like someone was like, okay, like she's from my town. Like if she could do it, like I can do it. And just big motivation for me. And throughout my process, you know, wasn't the easiest route. Like my travel ball coach told me, hey, like maybe Division I isn't for you. Maybe let's start looking at some mid-majors. And that kind of broke my heart. I was heartbroken. Now fast forward to like my freshman year of high school, when at the time a lot of people were being recruited, and that was normal for my age level. And being told like, hey, maybe let's start looks at some Division II, some mid-majors. That's maybe more your caliber. And I was like heartbroken and I took a lot of offense to it kind of. But I think having that happen, like, lit a fire underneath me to just work harder. And I remember I like changed my regimen and started to work out more and made sure I was hitting a lot more and went to some defensive like practices and camps with some people and even went to some, it was called like the infield mafia and it was with a baseball team and just like working on infield and trying to find any way to improve my game. And I think it really paid off because then it went into just the regular recruiting process, going to camps and sending out your emails weekly. I think emails were super big just to like let coaches know where you were. And yeah, I took a few visits. I had two offers before the rule change from Ball State and NIU. And then I wasn't set on going there just yet. I wanted to explore some other options. And finally, when the recruiting change happened on, well, September 1st of my junior year, when I was allowed to talk to coaches, I got a few calls from another school, took some other visits, and Michigan asked me to come on campus and I couldn't turn it down. Right when I stepped on campus, I knew this is where I wanted to be. And no matter what the circumstances were, if I had the opportunity to play here, I wanted to play here. And I'm just so thankful that I'm here and always grateful for the opportunity to wear the Black M.
I have chills. I have chills listening to your story. Fun fact, Ball State was my first ever offer as well. Like, so that's kind of crazy. I just love that you were so resilient when you heard your first, maybe your first, but like your big no of like, I don't know if you're going to be able to play at that level. I've had someone say that to me. So many people have had that, you know, someone say that, but you know, how are you able to turn that to motivation? Because I think what a lot of people do is they hear those words and then that becomes what they think about themselves and they just put themselves down this rabbit hole. But like, how are you able to shift that to motivation? Because I think that's a pretty awesome resiliency story.
I think it turns a lot to my family. They're a really big support system for me. Like my mom and dad have been with me through everything. And I have two older brothers who played college baseball and we've just grown up in this sport. And I remember after hearing that news, I was a little bummed for like the next week. And I was just like, man, like if I really wasted my whole life, like playing this sport, like I have this dream, like, can I even fulfill it? And there was a lot of doubt in that time. And I give a lot of credit to my family because one day I came home like a week later and there was like a little like wall decor on my bed that my dad had bought me. And it said like, oh, the places you'll go. And then the back said like, I'm so proud of you, baby girl. Like, keep working hard. Like, you will go far. And, oh, I'm, like, tearing up. But that, I think, like, changed my mindset into, like, don't, like, doubt yourself and don't count yourself out because, like, you do work hard and you can go wherever you put your mind to. And so ever since then, I feel like that was, like, my mind change, just having that great support system and kind of drowning out the outside noise.
I love your dad. Not just because he's a big teddy bear, but because, like, you needed that, you know, if you didn't have that in that moment, who knows, you know, what would have happened. But, you know, a lot of parents listen to this and it's like that simple belief that you can give your athlete. Like my dad was the same way for me. Like when I had a high school coach tell me, you know, you probably shouldn't look at D1, which is ironic. You also heard the same words, but my dad was like, they don't know you, you know, like your dad, your parents, like they know you. They know you, you know you. And sometimes we just need that little reminder to be like, you're right. Like they don't know me. They don't know what I'm capable of. But, you know, that also kind of like that shift also made you dive a little bit more into your game. Cause, you know, sometimes there is that little bit of truth of like, okay, so where is this coming from? Maybe I'm not, you know, at the level that I need to be. So let's just find a way to make sure, you know, these coaches that I want to play for see me and they can, you know, look at me and be like, whoa, like what a hard worker, even if they find you a little bit later, you know, than you wish they saw you. They don't know you, you know, they don't know you like you know you, but that's such a cool story. I didn't mean to make you emotional, but you know, it
no,
just,
that is okay.
But I love that you're just pouring your heart into this. That just means the world to me. But can we talk a little bit about catching and hitting because those are your babies?
Yes.
And you worked so hard to become so great in each area. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with catching because I am a little biased. I love offense a lot.
Okay, we'll start with catching and then you and I can just go off about hitting. I'm here for that. So you have a great dominant presence behind the plate. We talked about your presence already, but what are those elements of catching that maybe are kind of overlooked? Like the pieces that, you know, people don't realize you have to be really good at? Like, what are those pieces?
I would say a big thing is just having like the softball IQ and really like studying the game. We see the entire field as a catcher and you make a lot of those calls, but making sure you have the mentality of like you're making the right call. And it's okay, you're never always going to make the right call. But I think having that softball IQ can really help in those certain situations, especially like if players are coming home and there's a runner on second, but then maybe the better call is just to go two to get that back runner because you're not going to get that girl, and knowing where you are at in the game and what's the score and how's the team's energy at the time, I think are a lot of factors that go into it. So I think softball IQ is a big one for me just because you are that leader on the field and everybody's looking at you to make those calls and everything. I also think too is making that connection with your pitcher. Here at Michigan, we have 5 pitchers, Hannah, Aaron, Dirk, Jess, Emerson. Yeah, 5 pitchers here. And all of them throw different. They may all throw changeups, but not a single one of their changeups is the same type of changeup. So I think really learning how your pitcher throws, but then also building up that relationship you guys have together. And when I go out for most of those timeouts and go talk to them, I'm not telling them how to pitch. I'm not telling them like what's going on. I usually tell them a joke or I try to lighten up the mood because they're all great at what they do and they're amazing pitchers and they're here for a reason. And my job here is just to calm them down and make sure they throw some strikes. And if they throw some balls, it's my job to help them get some strikes there. And so I think my 2 biggest things are just having that softball IQ, but then also really building that relationship with your pitcher.
I think what's great about that is neither of those are fundamental. neither of those are, hey, you need to do this drill X amount of times. It's like literally relationships and knowing the game. How do you guys at Michigan kind of work on that IQ piece? Because I'm sure like when you were a freshman versus now, you're a different catcher because you've experienced more. But like, what are those things that you guys are working on in practice to help you with that IQ?
Yeah, I think a big thing, it's nice when we're doing drills and we have multiple catchers. So it's a really big piece that if like a coach makes an adjustment for one kid to like make sure you're listening so you don't make that same mistake, but hey, like you're learning. And then one thing I really like is sometimes we'll start out practice, not even out on the field. We'll actually be upstairs in our team room and Bonnie will have some film up and it could be the tiniest thing, but it's a game of inches. And she's like, okay, like in this situation, we maybe should have done this because this would have put us in a better situation the next inning. And so I think our coach is really breaking down the game and teaching it to us through the film, I think is also really beneficial. And I think just learning from your teammates and watching the mistakes that other people make and learning from them or even the own mistakes that you make and learning from them and try to soak it in. I also think too, something I like try to hone in on is like, I'm not a shortstop, but like I try to listen to what like maybe Bonnie's telling the shortstops or like what she's telling the second basemans, because knowing kind of what their perspective is, it can help me in like my situation where like I'm having trouble lining someone up. Well, maybe they're set up to line up somewhere else because that's what their position's meant to do. And I need to know that. So, you know, I can get on the same page with them. So I think not only honing in just on your position, but having like a broader vision of what everybody else is doing on the field and what their role is can really help.
So good. Can we talk about communication? Because I feel like you have to be the ace communicator. How often, you know, you probably do this less now, but like, I'm sure there are times where you don't make the right call, right? Like where, you know, you tell the throw to go somewhere and you're like, crap, that we didn't like that. But how are you still able to be confident with the calls that you then make after that, you know, after you maybe make that mistake?
Yeah, I give a lot of credit to our coaches. We practice a lot of communication and practice. And that's when we really learn. Like, I think something that I think I've grown with a lot from my freshman year to now is those plays that are coming forward because there's a runner, but, you know, we don't want our back runner to advance, and making that call of like, okay, am I calling 2 or am I calling 4? Is my first baseman cutting the ball type thing? And so I think we do a lot of practice communicating in actual practice, which helps in the game and makes you feel confident. But I also think, too, that A real big thing on our team is that you're going to make errors, you are going to mess up, but not a single person cares. Like, no one is going to remember 3 minutes later that you made that wrong call. Like, as long as you're confident with your call, I think the confidence part is the biggest piece. Like, if you're confident with that call, people are going to believe you and people are going to buy into it. But it's, you get into trouble when you're like, three, like, and you don't know where to go. That's where you run into a lot of trouble and you mess up communication with the entire field rather than just making a crisp, confident call and then working from there and just like learning from that experience and moving on. Mm-hmm. So almost be overconfident in your call. And if it's wrong, so what? You can learn from it, then not being confident enough and being unsure with what your call is.
Sure. If you make that wrong call, you know, is there like this ownership, this, that was me, like, how do you own that to be able to help, you know, keep that outfield, infield to still be able to trust your next call?
Yeah, usually I'm a big person, like in any situation where like I mess up and like I know that was not me, for example, like a pass ball or something, like I make sure I look at my pitcher. I'm like, that one's me. That's not you. I got you. A big thing on our team is saying like, I got your back. Like, I'll get you this next one. And I make sure I look at usually like our shortstop and some of the key people in those situations, like our first baseman, if they're the cut in that situation. I just like make it known that, hey, that's me. Or even after when we go into the dugout, after an inning, I'll like go up to him and be like, hey, like kind of walk through what my process was. And then if I'm still confused on what the call should be, I usually go ask the coaches or I'll talk with some other people on the team, like, okay, like what could we have done or like better in that situation? And that's kind of how we get through it. And the confidence piece, I owe a lot to my teammates because they give me all the confidence in the world and I give them back confidence. And so I think surrounding yourself with good people really helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure Chitty is a really great outlet too, to kind of, cause she's experienced the game, you know, in the Olympics. And yeah, you have some great role models in your corner. What is your relationship like with Chitty? That's not a question I planned to ask you, but you know, she seems like this goofy, fun loving coach, but like, obviously she's a big hitter. You're a big hitter. You're a catcher. She was a catcher. You know, what's that relationship like?
It's awesome. I think one of the greatest things that when the GOAT retired, you know, we had to bring a new person on to staff. And I think Chitty was the perfect person for the job. She just has so much love for this program and so much love for the game. And just seeing her like pour that out onto like all of us is just like amazing. And you're right. She is such a loud, goofy person. And I love it because it really just like brings me back to that. It's just a game. Like, it's okay. Like, you're not going to be perfect. And I think that's something she like preaches a lot, like you don't have to be perfect, but like if you commit and you give me your all, like things will be good and like the game will pay you back. And so I love the relationship with her. We were joking around the other day in the dugout. She's like, you're like still gonna like text me and everything like when you graduate, right? I'm like, duh, I'm not gonna forget about you. So just like building not only that softball relationship, but outside of softball relationship, I think is just so special, and having that mentor has just been great these past 2 years for me, for sure.
I love hearing that. Now, one of the catchers that I'm very close with locally, she's a huge fan of Michigan. I'm not going to drop her name. I'm not going to embarrass her like that. But I asked her, I was like, hey, if there are some questions you would want to ask Kiki Thole, what would they be? And the first one that she asked are, what are your favorite but most useful catching drills that, you know, are no doubters you're always working on and making sure that you're doing?
Yeah, I think something big, I still even struggle with those till this day, is like sticking. Sometimes like my wrist will like break a lot. So something I work on is like literally someone just flipping like weighted balls to me and making sure that I really just stick it and don't let it push back. And just working on a nice like firm catch. Also, I work a lot on picks. I would say I'm definitely a better picker than I am a blocker, which sometimes is not that great for me. But when you get to this level, the only time I'm really blocking is when there's a runner on third base and we need to make sure the run doesn't score. But with how fast the game moves as you get older, if you could pick that ball, you're going to have a better chance of throwing that girl out at second. So I think working a lot on those picks, because then it comes in handy when you have plays at the plate and the ball comes in as a short hop and not a long hop like you want it to be. But, you know, the game's not perfect. No one's perfect. Like, you're going to get those throws. And so really just working on those short hops and picks so they can translate not only to when you're catching your pitcher, but also when players are coming to the plate, which I think is huge. And then my last one is honestly probably just like transfer work, like keeping it smooth. I usually like to set up three cones to kind of like, and I try to exaggerate it almost because I want to try to push out as much as possible to shorten my distance. And when you like are kind of extending it a little bit and your like brain is pushing for more, your body learns how to get more and more. And I think that's been really helpful. And also while you're throwing down, don't just start a second base. Move the base like 10 more feet back, a little bit farther back, and throw through that person. Because if you could throw through that person, you're going to be on the money for your throw to second base. So those are probably like three drills that I like still do consistently and work on.
These are great tips, and I'm so happy that you're here to share them. You know, I'm one that's always preaching, you know, you have to play to your strengths, right? Like you have to know. And I like that you actually called yourself out and you're like, yeah, blocking's not really my number one thing, but I'm still working on it. But at the end of the day, like I think when it comes to even just getting recruited, it's mm-hmm. good for you to know what you're good at and where you can shine. So you can like be seen for those things. And then the other things will kind of just work themselves out. Now, we're not saying we're the worst in the world at these things, but we're just not as good. But I think with any player, like you have things that you're great at and you have things that you're not as good at. But what are those things where like when people, let's say we're recruiting you, okay. what were those things that they were seeing about you that you were owning that you knew were your bread and butter to make you who you are?
Are you saying from like a catching standpoint or from like every like a...
Catching first, and then we'll talk hitting.
Catching first, I think me was probably A, like my communication skills and like being loud on the field and making confident calls. And then I also think just my like strength of my throw and like getting the ball down there. I think showing off that quickness and like the strength of my throw were two of my biggest things that I showed off as a catcher.
Those are your showstoppers. Yes. It.
All around, I would say the big thing is just like energy, like making sure you're sprinting on and off the field, like literally the tiniest things, but they go such a long way. I know I've talked to some other college coaches or like just with our own staff and like certain things, like really check people off the list, like carrying your own equipment, being responsible for stuff. And I think making sure you take care of those little things can actually go a lot farther than you think. Just outside of the softball diamond.
Okay, last question about catching. What is expected from a D1 catcher that athletes who want to be in your shoes one day need to know? You probably talked about all of them, but like, what are like the core ones?
I think a core one is definitely being loud and confident. I think a lot of people look to you on the field to really run the field and like be that leader on the field. I also think to that you just need to be resilient. I think something with catching is you're not always going to be perfect. You're not always going to block every single ball. You're not always going to get every single runner out. But having that mentality that no matter what, you're in at the next pitch because you are in every single pitch of the game. So just having that mindset of not getting down on yourself when things don't go perfect, because coaches see that and like you want to be that person that's resilient and don't sulk in your errors or the negativity, because the next pitch is coming. And that's something we really preach here, is one pitch at a time. And what just happened, happened. Take what you can learn from it and move on, because you can't change it. And so, yeah, I would just say being that loud leader and just being resilient. And I truly believe the fundamentals will come and you can always work on those. But I think those two are key for getting that, your foot in the door.
Yeah. And catching is such a selfless position, you know, like the most on the field. You have to literally make your pitchers look good, make your outfielders who maybe kind of slipped up on a throw, make that look good. Like there's a lot of selflessness when it comes to being a catcher. Do you feel like if you're ever getting in your own head for any sort of reason, is it, you know, a tactic for you to just pour into your pitchers? Like even though you might not be feeling great, does it make you feel better when you can just pour energy into other people?
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because that's something huge that I like try to do, is if I'm having like the worst game possible or stuff like that, like it is so easy for you to fall down that road of like, I'm going 0-for on the day right now. Like nothing seems to be going my way. Like, no, like change your mentality, like pour your love into your teammates, because it's like, you wanted to play a team sport. It's a team sport. So whatever you could do, find something to flip that perspective to be like, you got this, Dirk, or like who's ever up to bat, like pour your energy into the people around you, because I promise you that like it'll come back to you. And I don't know, we preach it a lot at Michigan, like you play the game the right way, the game will pay you back. And so you sulking and your errors and your negativity is not playing the game the right way. So I think just having that mindset of that, like, your good is coming. Like, you have worked hard. Just trust the process.
That was so good. And a perfect way to wrap up catching.
It's that time of the year where most athletes right now are asking me, Ashley, how do I develop my confidence? It's early on in the season. Sometimes we're not feeling our best right away. And this is a huge thing, almost like a pandemic around softball right now. So if you're looking for 14 days of a very simple step-by-step method of how to develop your confidence by doing physical skills and mental skills that'll allow you to feel better in your own skin, my confidence course is for you. So if you head to the link in the show notes or just head to my website, www.ashleybtraining.com, check out my 14-day confidence course. I made it $7 for a reason. It is clear cut. It is easy to complete. And I promise you, and you'll have it forever, by the way. I just got asked if you'll have it forever. You will. So whenever you need a little boost, whenever you need a little clarification on who you are and what you bring to the table, this is going to be your course that you can refer back to whenever. So head to the link in the show notes to check out the confidence course, and let's get started as early as today. All right, let's head back to this episode.
Can we talk about our favorite thing ever, which is hitting?
Yes. Oh, I love hitting.
Okay. Why? Why do you love hitting so much? Is that what you and your dad like spent the most time on at home? Like, what's the deal with hitting and why do you love it so much?
I think, like, yes, we play a team sport, but if you think about it, it's like you against that pitcher. Like, it is you. The circumstances are never always the same. Like, you don't know what's the uncertainty. It's just like a big adrenaline rush for me, and just like getting up there, and there, I don't know, there's just no better feeling than like getting a nice swing on the ball, and like it's just so effortless and the ball just goes. It's, I don't know, it's just like, it's hard to put into words, but I just love the competitiveness that you get when you step into the box and you don't know what's coming. It's like, it's almost a game inside the game, which I think is just so cool.
It totally is. What type of self-talk do you have, you know, up that? Does it change versus like when you have, you know, an ace pitcher that you're facing versus, you know, somebody who you typically should hit well off of? Like, does it change or do you try to keep it consistent?
If you would ask me that my freshman year, I was changing it all the time, like doing this, that and everything, like trying to take all these different cues. But thing now that I've gotten older, it's gotten really consistent. I think that helps because it helps with the confidence piece that no matter who's in that circle, I'm gonna dominate at the plate. And so like something I tell myself, and even after playing Indiana this past week, and I have a friend on the team and her dad came over, she's like, can you stop talking to the bat? And it's just like me telling my like self-confidence, because I just like something I tell myself is like, get your swing off, like just swing hard. And I think that just goes back to what Chitty and Faith have been preaching, is just like commit. Like if you commit to it and you give it your all and you get your nice swing off, like good things will happen. And so like I've just been, before I go out to play, you know, I twirl the bat, I like give a little smile, and I just tell myself, get your swing off, find your pitch. And that's like consistently what I've been telling myself. And I think it really correlates to the confidence that I have in the box.
Mm-hmm. So you literally talk to your bat.
Yeah, literally. Like, I'm not, like, actually talking to my bat. It's more of, like, I'm talking to myself. But it's just, like, I, like, hold the bat up so it, like, looks like I'm just, like, staring right at it and like, talking to it.
I used to do the same thing. I love that. I love that so much. So you kind of mentioned, like, the twirl the bat. And I'm a big routine person. Like, if I want to be consistent in one area, it's got to be my routine. So can you actually take us through your routine? I know you probably don't really think about it. You just do it. But I think I love hearing how hitters, you know, mentally and physically prepare for the at-bat or even to just step into the box.
Yeah, we talk about routines a lot here at Michigan. And So my routine starts actually when I am in the hole. I go up right where like the opening is in the dugout, and I sit next to Chitty, and I kind of work out my timing. And sometimes if I'm having a little bit of trouble getting the timing down the pitcher, I actually ask Chitty, I'm like, all right, can you listen to me? And I'm like, hit right now. And I'm like trying to work through like my process of like, when am I starting off this pitcher, looking at the windup. And then when I get on deck, I give a nice like big swing, like the biggest swing possible, just like getting my whole body like loose and everything. And then I like to time the pitcher like in the box, like I'm on deck, like I'm in the box. So like taking a nice hard take or like swinging if I think that ball's in the zone, and really just like getting my timing off her. And then when I get ready to go up to bat, I obviously look down at Bonnie, our third base coach, and then I twirl my bat, I let it hit the ground, and then I twist it and like look at it, and I tell myself like, get your swing off, find your pitch. And then I get to the back of the box, and then I get ready. And then each pitch, like I usually twirl my bat before I get back in the box, and that repeats itself.
Nice. It almost sounds like you're hunting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think like that's a key element that the greatest hitters do, is they get themselves into a place where they're the hunter, not the one being hunted.
Yeah.
And I just get chills thinking about that. Like, I literally want to go find video of you now, like from start to finish, and just watch you. Cause, you know, it's funny, you see all the highlights and like you just see, you know, the second before the pitch is thrown and then the home run, right? Mm-hmm. But it's actually like all of these different steps that go into your physical and mental preparation to help you be able to do the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's something that a lot of hitters kind of struggle with that I think you can give insight on. It's like they hit their home run, they're super stoked and excited, and now they find themselves in a slump because they're like, oh crap, I have to hit another one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, how are you able to be consistent with your process to help trust that, you know, it's not about the moment, it's about what goes into the moment?
Yeah, I think this is something that I've really had to work on, because not only after hitting that home run, you may be in situations where like bases are loaded and you come up and like you feel like all the weight's on you, like I have to score these runs right now. And like, no, like it's the same as it was if this was a 0-0 game, start of the game. And that's something I kind of tell myself, like after I do hit my home run, you know, I celebrate with my teammates, like that next inning when I'm coming up to bat again, like as I'm sitting in the dugout in the hole, I'm like telling myself, right, new game, like this is a 0-0 game right now, like new start, like stick to your process, find your pitch. And I think that's like really helped me to like reframe my mindset that like no matter what's going on in the game, you're still just going up to bat with a 0-0 count and you're facing this pitcher. And so I think kind of just telling yourself to not let the moment get bigger than what it is, and kind of just falling back on to the game you've been playing for years and the game that you love, and nothing's changed, nothing's different about this pitcher, and just like sticking to what you know is best.
Beautiful. What else about hitting should we go into? So maybe some like drill work. Like, I think, you know, you're a dominant, strong hitter, and, you know, you probably have some sort of drills that, you know, kind of made you who you are. Do you mind sharing some of those?
Yeah, I think some of my like favorite drills I love to do is, well, we've been working out a lot about this like anti-rotation. So your hips stay square to the tee. And it's all just an upper half drill, kind of getting your bat out there, which has been like really helpful for me this like past season, I would say. So that's something I've added into my routine. But then I like to do wide stance, where I open up my front foot, because after like you finish your swing, your front foot most likely opens. And then I just sit there, bat on shoulder, and then I bring it up and then I swing off the tee. And then after I do a round of those, then I like to do a flamingo drill. I usually like to cross my left foot over my right foot, sit in like the like nice hinge and load, and really feel it in my glute. And once I feel that it's burning, then I slowly get out of it and then explode into it. That's like a big drill for me. I do a lot of high T work to like stay on top of the ball. I feel like those are a lot of my T drills. And then most of those drills all can correlate into front toss, which I love. Mm-hmm. And that brings in the whole aspect of timing, which is something that, even though I've been planning it forever, I still struggle with timing, and most people still struggle with timing. So trying to find that good, nice set of drills, like those are the ones that I do to kind of feel good. And then I'm ready for whatever the coaches throw at us that day.
Yeah. So earlier when you were talking about your routine, you said that like 3-syllable phrase. What is that one? Hit it now. Was that what it was?
Hit right now.
Hit right now. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that? Because I think that's such a really cool way to break down your timing piece.
Yeah.
Do you work on that in practice too? I'm assuming you do in order to be able to make it happen in games. But like, can you talk about that a little bit and why that's important?
Yeah, so hit right now is actually something that I actually picked up just recently with Faith and Shitty. I was not having the best start to my season at the beginning of the year. And yeah, just tried to had to find something that would work for me. And what I was really struggling with was timing. I was swinging at the right pitches and just the timing was really off. And so we set up some cones. And first off, Chitty timed how long my load takes and then to get my swing off. And once we figured that out, then she was able to figure out, okay, like, can you start when the pitcher is at 6 o'clock, at 12 o'clock, at 3, like trying to figure out where the pitcher is in their windup. And it's a lot of a guessing game, I will say. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. It's a lot of trial and error. Usually, like, if I'm just starting off a pitcher, I usually have her at about, like, right when she's coming for her backswing or coming out of her backswing, as I'll start, like, hit right now. And now is my explode. And I think it just really helps me too. Like if a pitcher does throw an off speed pitch, I can like stay in my right and like extend that right to my now. And I think like psychologically, it just like slows down my brain that like, okay, sit in your load. Now it's time to explode. And I think that's really helped me with the timing aspect, just to kind of slow it down and not be so like rushed and getting in and out of my swing, rather than just like trusting what I've been doing in practice and like really feeling yourself get into that hinge and then quickly getting out of it.
That's so good. That's so good. I highly recommend people, like, maybe your phrase isn't hit right now, but like that works for you, but like find that 3-syllable phrase for you to kind of break it down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge way to work on timing, and you probably do it even on front toss, but like, I think that's a huge part of hitting is finding when you start. When do you start your load? And if you feel like you're rushing through your hit right now, you're probably like, okay, start sooner, you know? Mm-hmm. Exactly. So good. Anything else with hitting that you're like, we need to talk about this before we move on?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause these were very gold tips, by the way.
I don't know. The last thing I guess I could say about hitting is that like, it's inevitable. You like will fall into your slumps and you will fall into periods of time where like you just can't seem to figure out why like nothing is going your way. No matter how many hours you work, it's just like still not going your way. Like I just encourage you all to just like keep pushing through it. And like I promise that like there is light at the end of the tunnel. Like you will come out of it. Like if you are continuously like working hard and like having good mindset, like It will happen for you. You just got to trust. Like, just trust it. I know it's hard, but just have some blind trust in the game and it'll pay you back.
That's really good. Now, if someone right now, let's say, is like in the thick of it, like things just aren't clicking, not working, and they feel like hope is lost, like they're working really hard and they're not seeing results, like, is there some sort of like a time where you're like, okay, maybe we just stop hitting for 2 seconds. Like maybe it's not the work, it's this part, mm-hmm. right? Like how do you know the difference between, is it a physical thing or is it a mental thing? I firmly believe it's usually more mental than it is physical.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
I would agree. I think it's definitely more mental than it is physical, because like you do put in the hours, you put in the work, like you're doing great in practice. Like you know how to hit the ball. And I think for me is something, as I've like gotten older, I've like realized that like, you know, I still come in on majority of my off days and hit. But you know, sometimes You just need to take that day. Like, if you're really in that thick of it, just take that day. Go do something that has absolutely nothing to do with softball. Go, if you have a favorite hobby, go do that. Go take a walk, do something, and totally just take softball out of the picture just for that day. And just clear that mind. And the next day you come in, like, that's when you get back to work. But I think finding a way to just, like, have a good reset day, a reset period, like, I promise you it's not going to put you behind if you don't swing for one day. Now, like, don't take a whole, like, month off. But, like, sometimes it's really good just for your brain to, like, get that nice reset and to be like, okay, like, I am not just softball. Hitting the ball, hitting a yellow ball and running around 3-4 bases is not end-all, be-all. And so I think just taking your mind out of that and just, like, living life to what it is, I think could really help and give you a good reset.
Mm. You almost have to, like, find your joy, something that makes you joyful, because you're sitting in a place where you, like, can't find any. And mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what's my thing? I love going to the movies. Okay, I'm going to go to the movies on my off day. And then you'll feel a little bit of that recharge. That's good. That's really good advice. Now, speaking of being someone more than an athlete, you are the vice president for Michigan SAC. Can you talk about what that role is as a student athlete?
So SAC is our student athlete advisory committee. So, like, the best way I explain it to people is it's like essentially student council, but for athletes at university. And it's an NCAA like mandated group. So every university has to have one. And it's something I got into my sophomore year and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, I think I want to like try to run for an executive board position. And junior year I ran for it and I got it. So I've been the vice president for the past 2 years. And I think it has just been eye-opening for me. I think I'm privy to a lot more information than a lot of my peers are, which sometimes is good, but then also sometimes bad. But I think it gives me just a sense of more like gratefulness, because like I think sometimes people don't know everything that goes into running an athletic department. But then it also gives me a sense of like things can be changed and like we can change that, because you do see some of the issues that happen across all campuses with all universities. And I just think being in that room and being able to use my voice has just been like so empowering, because you're right, I am more than softball, and softball gave me this opportunity to be on this committee. But I think that there are some issues that can be changed in athletics, and I just thought it's been so cool to be a part of it and be a part of the conversation.
It's incredible. Okay, so I'm gonna you don't know this, but that's how I met my husband.
I think I did know this.
So you did know this? Okay, wonderful. But yeah, so I was in SAC as well, which we actually called it something else when we were there, but we changed it to SAC. And yeah, he and I went to Chicago, which we'll talk about that in a second too, for, you know, the Big Ten meeting. And we mm-hmm. represented Purdue together. But even before that, he came back and there was some legislation that like the athletes wanted to change. And then he was just like, went through a list of athletes literally. And he was just like, I don't know, like who wants to help me change this bylaw? Mm-hmm. And literally I was on that list of people. I was like the only one who responded to his email. And we started meeting about, you know, changing this bylaw, which the bylaw was, I don't know why I'm getting into all of this, but I feel like it's good information. At the time, Big Ten schools for football, men's hockey, which we didn't have, and for men's basketball, student athletes couldn't go to those games for free, but they can mm-hmm. go to every other every other game for free, which kind of stunk because, you know, those are our biggest sports and, you know, to get a ticket for any of these games is ridiculous. And our friends are on the court, you know, and our friends are on the field. Mm-hmm. So we actually worked on this bylaw change and we changed it. And in that process, we started dating, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I will say from that experience, I'm with you. Like to have your voice be able to be heard and mm-hmm. to make like real change within not just your organization, but all others in the Big Ten, like it's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and thank awesome. You for doing that, because I loved getting free tickets to the Big House.
you're so welcome. I'll tell my husband. Because he was the president and I was the vice president.
Oh.
When we put it together. Isn't that funny?
Sad sweethearts.
Literally. But no, we're to just kind of wrap this piece up. There's something so important to kind of represent something, some people other than yourself as well. Cause like there were other conferences where like, it just sounded like they just wanted all of these things just cause it sounded great. But like, I feel like in the Big Ten, they do it the right way. It's like academics and athletics like are all covered here. And it's like for the best of the student athlete, that is the priority in Big Ten SAC. And you go to these meetings and again, you hear all of these different things going on and you're like, okay, some people need to know this. Some people probably don't need to know what's going on here. But, you know, it's so important for athletes to kind of experience this, and not every athlete does, but how cool is it like that you get to represent not just softball, but like Michigan athletics?
It's just, it's amazing. And like, because of my role in SAC, I was able to testify in a congressional hearing this past January, which was like, oh, so cool. So like life-changing. And I like am so grateful for like being in those conversations and like being able to use my voice. It's just been amazing.
Okay. You have to talk about this congressional hearing. So you and Hutch went to DC.
Yes. Well, to start it all off, I got an email from this like federal affairs person from Michigan. I'm like, this is a joke. Like, this is some scam. Cause at the same time, there was some other like people acting as other people on campus. I was like, no, it's just some scam. Like, why do they want me? So then I like screenshot it and sent it to our SAC liaison. She's like, no, like you should probably answer that. It sounds like it's coming from our department. And I was like, okay. And now mind you, the hearing's on Thursday. I got this email Friday night of the week prior.
No.
Saturday, I'm on the phone with, it was Representative Debbie Dingell. She wanted a student athlete, specifically a female student athlete, because that's her like big push is for like women's rights and stuff like that. And she, her team like reached out to me and I talked to them on Saturday. Then Sunday, talked to Bill Arrakis, who is like the head of this committee that wanted me to testify because I had to get approved by his committee to be a witness at the hearing. And I was like, okay, talking to these people on Sunday. Monday rolls around, I don't hear anything if I'm going or not. So I'm like, okay, like they probably like picked a different candidate, like that's fine, like whatever. Tuesday rolls around at 10 a.m. I receive an official statement from the House of Representatives saying like, congratulations, like you've been invited to testify at a congressional hearing on name, image, and likeness. If you could have a written testimony to us by 10:30 a.m. today, and you will give a 5-minute statement on Thursday morning. And I was like, it's 10 a.m. right now. So the lady did respond. She's like, this is a like quick turnaround. So when do you think you can get it to me by? And Debbie Dingell's staff said that night. So the entire day I wrote with Ashley Korn, our SAC liaison, my testimony. We worked hours and hours, thankfully. Had no class that day, so I went to practice, then came straight to the academic center where I'm at right now and worked tirelessly. And then they were originally going to send me with no one to DC. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable going to a city I don't go to often by myself. And so I was like, so, you know, Hutch still works in the athletic department. You think she's not doing anything? And our compliance person was like, well, yeah, she's not busy. Like, we'll send her out there with you. And she agreed. She's like, oh, of course I'm going to do this. She flew out with me to DC, flew back, then flew out to another conference. Like she was there that week. And I'm so thankful that she came with me because she was awesome. But then got to DC, testified that morning with the president of the NCAA, a volleyball player, Radford, the Missouri Valley Conference commissioner, a football player from UCLA, and then a professor from Arizona State. And I was just like really such a great experience listening to like everybody's point of views and kind of what they're fighting for and what they're advocating for and kind of hearing both sides of Congress and well, both sides of like the House and like the Democrats and the Republicans and what they want on their bill to send through to get passed. And I think it was just really eye-opening because NIL is not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger, and just trying to see what guardrails they'll put up, if any, will student-athletes become employees? It's just a really big issue, and I don't know. I'm just so grateful and honored that I was asked to do it, and it will be a top moment of my life for sure.
Incredible. I remember seeing this and my sister like even texted a tweet to me. She's just like, did you see this? And I'm just like, this is the coolest thing ever. Can you, I mean, you don't have to share the entire 5 minutes that you talked, but like, what's your take on NIL? Like, obviously you said it's not going anywhere, but like what changes need to be made? Because we all, I think, know that it's not good the way it is and that it needs to kind of be elevated. But what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think overall, I think NIL is a cool concept. And yep. Like us student athletes, like it's essentially a job, what we do here. Like we put in the hours, but I don't think we should be employees. I think everybody thinks like, oh, you're an employee, you'll get paid. But like, okay, well, I'd be paid minimum wage. Like, will I still get my scholarship? If I do bad during a game, can my coach just fire me? Will the athletic department match a 401k plan? Like, there's so many other aspects that go into employment that I think people don't think about all those areas. So like, I am like definitely against student athletes becoming employees. Something that like I think needs to like change so everybody can kind of be on the same playing field is each state writes their legislation different. So the way Michigan writes their NIL law is different than the state of Missouri, and is all these states have their different way of writing it. So each state can find loopholes in how right. they use it in the recruiting, which then becomes a disadvantage to some other universities because they're not allowed to use it as a recruiting tactic, but then other states can. So then therefore it makes the playing field uneven. And then my last thing, honestly, is just if we're going to use NIL as recruiting, we're going to use it as recruiting and just let it be, or make a law that they can enforce for it not to be used as recruiting, because I think we're stuck in the middle right now where like some universities are getting screwed over and mm-hmm. other universities are really benefiting from it, but are doing it illegally. So I think just not so much vagueness, just some clear guidelines from the NCAA and just from state legislation, I think could really just give everybody like a clear cut, like definition of what they're doing. And I think all areas could then thrive. But I think right now it's like, well, I don't want to risk eligibility and universities don't want to be liable and all this stuff. And so I think if we could just get some better guidelines and put up some guardrails around it, I think everybody would be in a good spot. NIL is a whole nother can of worms that I could talk hours on. So.
I know. Maybe next time on the show. But no, I'm glad you brought this stuff up because it's important work and you're involved in it. And I'm just so proud of you for, you know, not only just having a voice for Michigan softball, but for, you know, Michigan as a whole and even the Big Ten as a whole, and be able to represent like all these student athletes. So epic. So awesome. So one more little thing that I wanted to talk about before we wrap up, because you literally have to go to class and go to practice and all these other things. Your parents have been so instrumental in your career and they go to literally everything, which is why my parents and your parents bonded. Because they went to all of Christina's games her senior season, second senior season, how do you want to call it? But just take me through just briefly, you know, what it means to have parents like yours. What are the sacrifices that they made in order to make your dreams happen? Obviously, you shared a little bit about your dad, but I know there's more that I'm sure you would love to share.
Yeah, I might get emotional because I love my parents to death. Like without them, like I would not be here. I would not be playing the sport I love at my dream university. They sacrificed everything. I mean, even I think a big thing is my mom, like growing up, like she wanted to raise us kids. And I like, because she did that, like, I want to do that. Like she stopped working and my dad was the only one working to raise like me and my two brothers. And then finally, when I got old enough, like my mom went back to work and everything. But I think that was just huge. Like having her in the household and like seeing her, and that kind of built the foundation, and that her and my dad would literally do anything for us just to see a smile on our face. And I think another thing I really admire is that like they pushed me, but they never like forced it, if that makes sense. Like my mom was always like, if this is your dream, it's your dream and I'll help you get there. But like, I can't do it for you. And I think that was like huge because I knew I had the confidence and the support from my parents, but it wasn't like coming from like, you have to do this. Like it wasn't coming from like a negative area. It was always coming from a loving, supportive area for my parents. And yeah, I love them to death. They sacrificed so much. Like our family trips turned into softball tournaments or baseball tournaments. And they did everything for me to have the bat I wanted or to get another A2000 or get cool catching gear and stuff like that. So they sacrificed so much, and no thank yous or I love yous will ever be enough for how much they sacrificed for me and my brothers. And I'm just forever thankful.
Well, I know they're just loving soaking up the rest of season for you, and I'm sure they're at everything and we miss them. Hopefully I can get up there and sneak up to a game and see them and you and give you a big hug. But before we go into our quick little Five to Thrive ender, where can people follow you? Because I know people are in love with you and just want to keep following not only your softball career, but everything post career as well.
Yeah. So I guess you could follow me on Instagram, which is kiki.thole.2. I do have a Twitter, but I don't really use it. I use it to like repost like highlights or like my teammates, or like if Michigan sports does really good. So I would say Instagram's probably the best one to follow me on.
Perfect. I will make sure all of those are in the show notes. Do you want to dive into these rapid fires real quick?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm excited.
Okay, so speaking of NIL, you're literally, you represent a milk company. Like, and this is like the coolest freaking thing ever, especially because I love milk. And every workout in college always ended with a jar of milk. But what is it like representing, you know, this milk company? Like, why, where did this come along?
Well, I love milk. Like, my friends clown me about this all the time, but
it's amazing.
If the world was going to end, you can only drink one thing for the rest of your life, it'd be milk. But white milk. I do drink chocolate milk like after workout, but like my favorite drink of all time is 2% white milk. I used to, our juniors, they have a house, we call it the pit. I used to leave a gallon of milk at their house so I would have something to drink when I was over there. It's like that. I love dairy. I love cheese. Like, I think I eat cheese every day. It's kind of insane. But I really love milk. And they're actually, they work with Michigan, UDIM, who I work with. They work with Michigan. And they were looking for some student athletes. And they found out that I was a really avid milk drinker and lover. And so they had reached out. And I was like, this is the perfect NIL deal possible.
It is.
It was great.
It's amazing. And by the way, they're called Milk Means More. I'll try to tag them as well. I think you're the perfect candidate. Like, there's no doubt. It's incredible. Okay, we had to start with that. What was the last show you binge watched or are you currently watching?
A show I binge watched? Oh, this is hard because I've been so busy. I guess I'll say the last show I watched, and it's not even so much that I'm into the show. It's just because all my teammates and my housemates were watching it. So I was like, okay, fine. Like, I guess I'll watch it with you guys. Was The Bachelor.
Oh, so yeah. That.
The concept is weird. I don't think I'd ever be on The Bachelor myself. But it was just like, I think it's more funny for me to see like all the reactions of everybody else in the room. Like, no way. I can't believe he did that. And I was just like, he just made out with like six people. Like, what was his love?
That's so good. I love that. You just adopted it for your show. It's funny you talked about this earlier, but what do you do on your off day? What's your thing? What are you doing?
What is my off day look like?
Other than The Bachelor.
So it's really nice. Most of our Mondays are off days. So it's like really good. I don't have any class on Monday. It's perfect for a senior year. And thankfully here at Michigan, we're really fortunate. Our athletic trainer gets some people some massages after a long weekend. So I go and get myself one of those, which is very nice. And then I usually go and see, it's every other like off day, but I usually go and see like our sports psychiatrist just to like, most of the time I don't even talk about sports. I just talk about my life and like some things I can like use to like keep anxiety and stuff down. Just like feel good, like mentally up there. And then I usually go hit with Ellie Sealer, our left fielder. Her and I were big hitting partners together. Love to hit with her. And then usually when we show up to the building, some other people are there. We usually just do like only hitting, quick workout, T-work, front toss, and then get out of there. And then I just do homework. I try to catch up on everything, so I like get ahead so I don't have to do stuff later in the week when we leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then either hang out with my teammates. I do have a boyfriend. I sometimes go to where he lives in Michigan, or I picked up reading as a hobby. So I like to read now.
Nice. Good for you. Chill day, get a little work in. But yeah, I like it. You kind of just choose what you want to do. So you're in school of business. What do you want to do with this degree post-college?
Well, see, I currently applied to law school, so I'm hoping to get into a law school. Fingers crossed. And I would want to do some type of like business laws, like mergers and acquisitions, like bankruptcy, like somewhere in that realm. But like ideal dream job would be if I could work like general counsel for like a professional baseball team.
Mm.
Help them like when they want to draft guys, like write up their contracts and like all that like fun stuff. So like stay in sports, but like still have that like different perspective. So we'll see. Maybe it'll come my way. Maybe it won't. But a little mix of my business and then hopefully a law background.
We'll have this recorded forever. So when it does happen, we'll refer back to it and be like, Kiki called her shot. Amazing. Last question that I have for you. What does it mean to be a Michigan Wolverine?
Oh, this one I'll probably get emotional because it means everything to me to be a Michigan Wolverine. And I don't know, I think back to my young self and how much I dreamed to be on this campus. And sometimes I'll just be like driving through campus and I'm like, wow, like I'm really here. Like I did this. And I don't know, just like having like as much as I struggled with it a little bit at the beginning of my career, like having my aunt as my coach and just like that dynamic, like I love it. And like I know that I'll always be her favorite niece or any of the cousins. But just like building that relationship with her has just been amazing just because growing up, she was always here. So she was just always my aunt who visited on holidays. And so building that relationship has just been amazing for me. And getting to know her on and off the field has been awesome. And I don't know, this place is just special to me and it always will be. It'll always be home to me. And oh, I just get chills and I start to tear up because this place means the absolute world to me. And if anybody ever gets the opportunity to come to Michigan and to play on the Michigan softball team, like just know you're blessed and you're stepping into a family that goes on for years. And our alumni, like we roll deep and we all still keep in touch, which is awesome.
Yeah, the way, you know, Hutch built that legacy of alumni is, and I somehow feel like I'm part of the team and I'm didn't even go there. I hope everybody can kind of find that fit just like you did, you know, and you worked so hard for it. You were told that you couldn't have it, but you said you wanted it so bad. And, you know, everyone deserves that. Everyone deserves to find that place where they can find home. And so I knew you'd be the perfect one to ask that question too. So thank you. Kiki, thank you so much for spending your day with me. I know you have a lot to do, but I'm just so proud of you and everything that you're up to. And I can't wait to watch how the rest of the season goes for you guys. You are on the upswing and there is so much to look forward to the rest of the season.
Yes. Thanks, Ash. I had so much fun. I appreciate it.
Wowza. I know this was a bit of a long episode, but if you tuned into the entire thing, you know there was so much good stuff coming out of this episode. You know what to do if you enjoyed it. Please either write me a review on Apple Podcasts, share it with your friends on social media, or just challenge one friend to listen. It is the easiest way to support this podcast, and because of you, we are shooting up through the rankings, so keep it up. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of When the Cleats Come Off. And as always, don't forget to stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling. I'll see you soon.